A prominent food policy expert says Trump administration efforts to rescue the manufacturing sector through a trade war are likely fruitless. Joe Glauber is with the International Food Policy Research Institute and a speaker at the Illinois Farm Bureau Income and Innovations Conference in Normal. Glauber says the tariffs now imposed by many countries will destabilize supply chains beyond the farm sector.
It raises costs for those producers, be it a car company or a nail manufacturer or whatever, and they become less competitive. So it doesn't even help them. They're far more competitive by bringing in these intermediate parts. Moreover, there's a lot of these industries that have moved towards more robotics and other things. I don't think that just because you can say, well, this industry, we're going to try to protect this industry, means that they're going to necessarily hire a lot more labor. In the sense that, you know, those that have moved to robotics have found them very, very cheap. So I think it's hard to kind of go back to a ideal state of like the 1950s economy or 60s economy and say, boy, that's really what we want. I mean, the world, unfortunately or fortunately, has moved on. And I think, again, I would argue it's been a good thing for consumers and others. And certainly those hurt by it, that globalization, there's no question. I think the big mistake that the U.S. and some other countries have probably done is not focus more in terms of helping those who are displaced by it and in terms of trying to find new jobs and retraining and those sorts of efforts.
Is it really possible to focus on that, though? The example is the industrial Midlands of England, which are still kind of in a recession a century after the end of the coal era.
Well, that's true and not true. I mean, if people talk about Manchester and Leeds all being, you know, having seen renaissances over the last 20 years or so of different industries moving in there. Now, you know, you could also look back and say, gee, wasn't it great when we had 5 million farmers? These areas change I don't think you can necessarily lock things in place, even if you wanted to.
Part of the issue, though, with the Midlands is that people didn't move away. With the farm example in the U.S., they are moving away. How do you know when an employment sector that is made obsolete is going to be susceptible to help, and when is it not?
Well, it's true, and I certainly don't mean to downplay the cost of this, because you do see, you know, all one has to do is go across some of the large cities in the Midwest and see stranded factories and that are now vacant. And with that, of course, there's a lot of labor that are no longer employed in those factories. On the other hand, you see a lot of medium-sized towns in the Midwest that are actually doing quite well, largely connected with universities, where you see growth areas. It's not all a bad situation.
What will be the upshot of the current state of tariffs on farmers over the next year or two?
Yeah, in the short term, we've sort of seen what we had this initial drop in prices that was, you know, 10-15% for corn, soybeans, other row crops. They've come back a little bit over the last couple of last week or so. A little bit. I mean, we're not nearly where they were before the tariffs were announced. I think in the short run, what you're going to see is a pretty big disruption in the soybean supply chain. I mean, we shipped one out of every four rows of soybeans that was produced in the country. We shipped to China. Those now are going to have to find a new home. One of the immediate things that we've seen is the fact that Brazilian soybeans now are trading at about $60-$70 a metric ton higher than the U.S., which reflects the fact that China is trying to buy what beans it can from Brazil. That means for countries like or Japan or the EU or others that are buying soybeans are going to looking out on the world and will probably buy from the U.S. So I don't think this means that all that production that normally would have gone to China now goes into government stocks, or it will get sold, but at a discount. That's the short-term price.
Will there be wastage and inefficiencies induced as these new market chains are discerned, and how long will that take?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because obviously you're adding transportation costs. I mean, these things normally would go to China. The fact that they're going somewhere else almost de facto means that they're doing it at a higher cost. But imagine we have seen where Argentina and others now are contracting to buy U.S. Soybeans. That's great in the sense that it has a market, but that also means that it has to get into Argentina, it has to get unloaded there, processed, and then exported again. And all that adds costs. So someone pays that cost. Unfortunately, I think if we're looking at the two countries that are going to bear the most costs, or bear most of these costs, will be U.S., and we've already seen that with market prices here, and in China, obviously, because they're the ones ultimately are the ones who are purchasing soybeans, and they're seeing higher costs as well. But it is very, I think, disruptive to see these supply chains, which have grown and developed and infrastructure developed over time. Right now, the soybean market, the U.S. exports about 6 months a year and then pretty much stops, and South America production comes on. They export for 6 months. If you're talking now that saying that China will only be buying from South America, that means that someone's going to have to store soybeans a lot longer than they did normally. And neither China nor Brazil really has a lot of storage. And so I think that's also another cost. And again, those are investments you don't want to be seen made, because hopefully we do get back to normal relations with China.
Well, how long can China last? How long can we last without it severely impacting the farm sector? And how do you define victory in a trade war?
Both really good questions. For the first, it's unclear how long it can last. I mean, what I fear is if this progresses into the fall and beyond, the real cost will be not so much what's happening on prices now, it's the fact that we lose market share over time, because China will, again, because of the fact that Brazil is seeing so much higher prices than what we're showing here in the U.S., they're going to have strong incentives to plant more soybeans and bring more land into production and just accelerate trends that I don't think that are going to be harmful to U.S. producers. It doesn't mean that we can't get back those markets, but frankly, that's going to be tough, I think, to regain trust, to try to keep these supply chains operating. And hopefully things get resolved very, very quickly. I don't know how you declare victory in this. I think if your measure is a trade balance, I think that's, to me, that's a misguided measure. And I just don't think that there are certain things that I think the administration is absolutely right for going after China about, things like intellectual property and those sorts of things. And hopefully, you know, an agreement could be made there. I would have preferred seeing them to take actions within the WTO against China, with perhaps the EU and Japan and others who have interests in this area as well. But certainly, you know, to get a better behaving China in world markets would be a great thing. But I do think that to me, the real danger is farmers are going to pay a pretty high price in the short and medium term unless something's resolved soon.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker, talking trade policy with Dr. Joe Glauber, a senior fellow at the International Food Policy Research Institute. What are likely to be impacts on farmers? Are we going to see an acceleration of the trend toward large-scale ownership and small-scale operators getting out of the business? What will this do?
That's a far more difficult question to sort of look forward and say, well, what are the implications for, say, structural issues in agriculture, number of farms and those sorts of things. You know, we've talked a lot about China. We have similar issues with, trade talks going on right now with Canada and Mexico, which also could turn sour. The worst case, I think, could have very, very detrimental effect on the ag economy, and just because exports are so important. And it's hard to make adjustments if you're getting hit on several fronts at once. Would presumably have to fall back on other crops and make those adjustments. And in the case with NAFTA, there you do see a lot of because the countries are so close, we do a lot of intermediate trade with Canada. We do a lot of intermediate trade with Mexico. We see feeder pigs coming in from Canada. We finish them. We slaughter them. We ship them elsewhere, processed products to back to Canada, other places. Similarly with calves coming in from Mexico. They're finished. They're brought and slaughtered. And you look at say something like Mexican beer. They buy barley and hops from the U.S., make beer, and then export it here. So,
what does a successfully renegotiated NAFTA look like? And you have talked a little bit in various scenarios about not repeating the injustices of the past, but looking forward. What needs to be looked at, and what injustices of the past need to be just sort of written off?
Yeah, I, as far as NAFTA is concerned, I mean, and I'm talking the ag agreement part of NAFTA, I think it's been a great agreement for U.S. farmers. I don't think there's, and you can go down the list of most commodity groups, I think, have been very favorable towards NAFTA. True, there are some protected sectors like sugar and some fresh fruit and vegetable, but most of the fruits and vegetables that come in here are counter-seasonal. They've actually increased overall consumption of fruit and vegetables in this country because of that, because we now get them 12 months a year. But NAFTA was done 25 years ago. So it's, there are things that can modernize NAFTA. I think things like dispute settlement to get a more rapid resolution of disputes. I think trying to harmonize standards. We've now seen this whole growth in e-commerce, and there wasn't even much of an internet around at the time NAFTA was signed. I mean, it was just getting started. And now, so there aren't really rules governing that. And my understanding is the negotiations have spent a lot of time in that area, to try to modernize those aspects of NAFTA so that things that facilitate trade. And I think those would be very, very good things.
The president's emphasis on manufacturing, though, is kind of something out of the past. Is that going to be a roadblock for a successful conclusion of these restarted negotiations?
Yeah, I think it potentially could, and I hope it won't be. But I think two of the things that the president has talked about is one, a sunset provision, where if people aren't happy with NAFTA in 5 years, that everyone could just, or they would have to go back to Congress every 5 years to get it renewed. I think that would just throw a lot of uncertainty into those markets.
Joe Glauber is with the International Food Policy Research Institute and a speaker at the Illinois Farm Bureau Income and Innovations Conference in Normal, where GLT caught up with him. He also says the U.S. lost new markets by pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Canada and others now have preferred status with Japan and Australia, and New Zealand has better access for dairy products to Japan. So the U.S., he says, is actually losing access as a result.